I am only as good as my word. We've said this before. I am only as good as my word. I'm only as good as my word. Why do we say that? Why do we say we're only as good as our word? Well, the reason that we say we're only as good as our word is that our thought is our word. Our very ideas that flow through our head are our word. The very objectivity, the things that we do outwardly are our word. Our word is not just a word. Our word is a pledge within ourselves. I say, last night, I said to myself, I will wake up at 3. And I woke up, plunk, at 3. Actually, 2:55. A little early, but I woke up at 3. Each time I say to myself what I'm going to do at night, I do it. And I say, I'm going to sleep straight through until 3, with no disturbances, no telephone calls, no anything. And I do. The telephone calls may be there, but I don't hear them. I don't know what's going on around me. I'm just asleep and very content and very happy. And I pledge myself to do that. Now, there are other evenings I go to bed and I say, oh, I'm so tired. I wonder if I can fall asleep. And when I say, I wonder if I can fall asleep, I am pledging myself to falling asleep slowly, not comfortably. I'm only as good as my word. So when I learn to speak my word at all times, under all circumstances, for all the purposes that I want to have, then that is done. Now, we have been talking about people who want to be part of the monastery. And we're very selective. We're very selective. We could have a lot of people here, but that wouldn't mean they were students. We could have a lot of people who live on the streets and would love to be here and live here and have all this paradise and eat all the good foods and everything else, have all the good company, but they're not necessarily students. You see, you don't realize, none realize who are here on campus, what a privilege it is to walk your path in such surroundings. You think you realize it, but you wish to go to town, you wish to go for an experience, you wish to fly to the moon, you know, you wish all these other things. And when you are here, really, as a super master student who is working on your awareness of your spiritual life, you have no desire to do anything but to follow the program to the letter. To the letter, when it says 1:35, you begin, you begin. When it says 2 o'clock, you quit, then you quit. And things like that, you just follow it to the letter. But do we do that? Do we feel impelled to do that? Do we feel it's necessary to do that? Unfortunately, no. Do we feel it's not necessary to do it because Herb's not doing it? Do we feel it's not necessary to do it because Ellen's not doing it? Do we feel it's not necessary to do it because Ingeborg's not doing it? Or Anita's not doing it? Or Sylvia's not doing it? Or Button and Love are not doing it? Whatever anyone else does, it should make no difference to us. We are the bond. We are the security. We are our word. When we speak our word that we're going to do anything at all, just do it. I'm going to have a good time. Yes, that way too. I'm going to drink 34 bottles of beer, and I'm not going to be drunk. Yes, you can. I'm going to drink a quart of scotch, and I'm not going to be drunk. Yes, you can. You give your body a heck of a workout, though. But why do we say such things? Why do we say such things? You know, we're sort of doing a reverse osmosis with James Herriot and All Things Great and Small, because James Herriot was a series on television quite a number of years ago, and a very beautiful series, all about this man who learned how to become a veterinarian and was an intuitive veterinarian. Very excellent. But you see, as I say, it was years ago. Now, when young boys and girls look at James Herriot today, they think, oh, he smokes cigarettes, so we'll smoke cigarettes. He goes into the bar and tanks up and then can't really stand up straight afterwards. Oh, we'll do that. Oh, he has this and he has that and he does this and he does that, so we'll do this. Now, you see, you have to be a person of your word. And you live in a different kind, a different time. Now, all of you know the story of Jesus, don't you? Jesus was a man who lived in Galilee 2,000 plus years ago. Okay. What did he do there? Well, he just went around having a ball, talking to people, sharing what he believed, sharing what was on his mind. He had trained as a rabbi, and he was a very competent rabbi, and to train as a rabbi, you have to go to rabbi school. You don't just become a rabbi because you call yourself a rabbi. You understand that? You don't just become a rabbi because you say, I want to be a rabbi, and because I'm Jesus Christ, you know. I mean, that would have alienated everybody from him if they knew who he was, because he became the nexus for all of the Jewish teachings, you know. But aside from that, he trained. He trained to become a rabbi. And he was a good rabbi. But he was too good, because he went deeper into the sayings of the Bible than most people did. Now, what do you do? Where do you go for your training, your studying? Do you go deep within yourself? I just said Jesus went deeper into the Bible than anyone else. What did he do? He went into himself. He went into himself and learned. Now, let me just ask you this. If I give you a dictionary, and I say, here's a dictionary for you, and you study it for 5 or 6 years, off and on, you know, however you use it, and then I come up to you and say, hey, you know, that dictionary is quite interesting. In that dictionary, it says this, it says that, it has this word, it has that word, this definition, that definition. You say, oh, really? Oh, that's interesting. Now, if you never check me and look it up, how are you going to know whether I was true or not? You follow me? Okay, now, the Buddha, he's supposed to be the 27th Buddha. He was supposed to be exquisite on the ancient teachings. Ancient teachings he knew from beginning to end. Did he really? Did he ever study them? Did he ever learn them? Did he ever read them? Where did the Buddha come from? He was a nothing. He was the son of a prince. Or he was a prince, the son of a king. That certainly didn't teach him all about the Bhagavad Gita and all the other wonderful books from down there. That didn't teach him that stuff. He was being trained in the court on how to do the court work. And so then he ran off and he just went around as a mendicant monk, begging, begging, begging. Now, when did he study? When did he study? Well, he didn't. He listened within, which is perhaps the best book he could study. And then later, he developed the followers. People would come to him as the Buddha, and they would say to him, oh, Buddha, you know, what can you tell us? And he would tell them things. And they would say, oh, such wisdom, such genius. Those people never, never, never read a book. Before the printing press, remember? They never read a book. They might have seen one in a monastery, but to read it, they didn't know the language. Only the monks and the priests and the whoever is in the monastery, they're the ones who know the language. So, you think you know it all when I say, here's the dictionary, now study it for 5 years. And if I came to you and I said, the dictionary has this word and that word, and this is the definition of those words, you say, oh, that's interesting. But it didn't interest you, so you didn't look up those words. You would never know if I really knew those words or not, if I really read those words from the dictionary. I might have just made them up, which is how most words are made up, you know? So, think about these things. Think about these things. A person gives their word based upon who they are, not who other people think they are. And as Jesus interpreted the Bible, the Old Testament, he interpreted the way that the priests the rabbis, scribes, and so forth, they didn't even know that. Because a scribe does what? Anyone tell me quickly?
Copy.
He copies the book. Now, does the scribe know what he's doing? He goes letter by letter, doesn't he? He may go word by word, if he is a brilliant scribe, but basically, they go letter by letter. Do they know the content of what they're writing down? No. Do they have any idea of what they're saying? No. Is everything they do letter perfect? No. The things they write down are not letter perfect, and so the Bible that comes from that time is not available to us in perfection, because it keeps changing with every scribe who remembers or doesn't remember. You are given the task of reading what someone else does to make sure it's correct. Are you dedicated to do that? Why are you dedicated? What causes you to be interested in doing that? Money? Working for the church? Or what? You see, all of these things come into other people's Bibles. And that's why I recommend most heartily for all of us that we read the Bible that's within us. And we set our word on the Bible that's within us. Now, what does the Bible within us say? The Bible within us says that we are perfect. The Bible within us says we are wonderful. The Bible within us says we can do anything we want to do. We can accomplish anything we want to accomplish. No holds barred. That's what the Bible in us says. Why then does the Bible not in us, the outer Bible, have limitations in it? Because the Bible outside of us is written by people who are attempting to manipulate and control us. They are attempting to keep us in line as good human beings, as good citizens, as good people, and that's what that's all about. The Bible in us, it teaches one thing. Be yourself and have fun. The Bible in us teaches us that we are great right now. We are wonderful right now. The Bible in us is a magnificent book. And when you're ready for the Bible within you, then you will start getting excited too. You see, you have not read the Bible within you. You've had a glimpse of it, but you've not read it. And you, anytime something exciting comes up in your consciousness or in your mind, anytime something exciting comes up in your world, you say, oh boy, it wasn't that great. I wonder who brought that out. Well, you did. You did, but you don't know it, and you're not taking credit for it. So, I'm only as good as my word. Take credit for your words, whatever your words may be. Did you ever swear? Is that what you want to take credit for? Did you ever use the Lord's name in vain, as the saying goes? Anita, who is the Lord's name?
Anita. God. Ellen.
What's the Lord's name?
God.
The Lord's name is Anita, and the Lord's name is Ellen, but it's certainly not God. God is a symbol that represents our spiritual quest. But God is within us. The spiritual symbol is within us. We keep giving it an outer name, and then we keep falling in the trap with that outer name, you know? So, who is the author of our spiritual Bible?
I.
We are. You are. I am. All right, now, why am I the author of my spiritual Bible? Is the spiritual Bible my word?
Yes.
Is it a good word?
Yes.
You better believe it. Is your spiritual Bible your word? Is it a good word?
Yes.
Do you stand behind your word under all circumstances? You got to be a little careful there. You can go into a place and you can set your Bible down mentally, you know, lay it on the table. And then somebody comes in and says, oh, that's a prettier Bible than I have. That's got gold leaf on it and everything. I'm going to exchange my Bible for that. And so they put their Bible in your place. And you pick up your Bible not knowing that it's not your Bible, even though it's not as pretty as yours. And then you start living by it. What happens? You start living a different life. This is what happens when our Bible is our word and our word is our Bible. And when we let our word be spoken at any time, under any circumstances, that are not where we feel we want to go, we will experience the results. We will have plenty to complain about. And what should we do about that? Start cleaning up our word, cleaning up our Bible, cleaning up our thoughts. Be totally in charge of who you are. Be the master of who you are. And when you do that, then the Bible is no longer needed on the outer side, but it's only on the inner side that it's needed. And whenever you need to know anything about the outer Bible, just listen within, and you'll hear. But what you'll hear is an interpretation. Hey, hear that word again? You'll hear an interpretation. It'll not be a reiteration of what's in the Bible, but it'll be interpretation. What do ministers do every Sunday in church? You give interpretations. Why should the ministers not give interpretations? Anybody know? Why should a minister not give an interpretation of the Bible? The minister should speak from his... Go ahead.
He should speak from his heart.
The minister should speak from his heart, and that's his Bible. And when he does that, everything is perfect. Now, why does a minister oftentimes use the Bible, and why do so many of them use the Bible?
It's an easy way out, because they don't listen within.
It's an easy way out, and they may or may not live it within, but the thing is, they want references. Something to jog their mind to talk for 20 minutes. Something to jog their mind to let them stand up there for a couple hours, you know. You've heard of Bible-thumping ministers? They take the Bible, now here it says in Job, here it says in Daniel, here it says, you know. And who knows that he's reading from there? Some people do. And they'll say, where are you reading, Pastor? From Job 1, 7, you know. So then you look at that, and that's not what Job said. That's not what Job said. This guy is doing his own thing. He's using maybe a word or two from that, if that much, to come out with his own brand of understanding. That's very interesting. We do that too. We do that too. But it's like Ingeborg. When Ingeborg gave a talk the other day, she got up and she talked about some old friend that she had known, some old people that she had known way back when she was a child, and she recalled it verbatim, which proves to be a very uninteresting story. It's just like the Bible in you, or the Bible that you read, is a very uninteresting story. Because who wants to read about they begat, they begat, they begat, they begat, they were children of, and stuff like that? Who wants to read that? Nobody wants to read that. Not even the Bible theologians. But why do they put it in? Well, it fills up space in their lecture. Really? It's just that simple. They are interested in filling up space. Are you interested in filling up space and you're talking? No. You want to be realistic about it. You want to be down to earth. You want to be perfect. So, I'm only as good as my word. What is your word all about? Is your word all about recognizing that you're a beautiful being? Is your word all about recognizing that you're divine, that you're the creator of your world? Is your word just wonderful from the way you go? Is your word just wonderful from the get-go? If it is, then you're doing great. But just remember, I'm only as good as my word. Let's make our word really good. We don't have to compare ourselves to Jesus. We don't have to compare ourselves to anybody. But when you say, "My, that is lovely," well, mean it. "What a good-looking hat you have," mean it. "I'm a happy person," mean it. In every way, mean whatever you say, and it will never be mean. Play on words here. Believe in whatever you say, and it'll always function perfectly. I'm only as good as my word. Are you only as good as your word? I believe you are. I love you.